Hey, everybody. So good to see you all. Pastors have rough weeks sometimes. I had one of those. So, but Sundays come every week, right? So, sometimes it's like pouring. We'll see what happens with a shook up snow globe. Got a good text. So, we're starting this series called Life Together, and I don't know what Carrie told you about it because I was helping Lyra with some things while she was talking to you guys. It's about relationships, you know, and we all care about relationships. And inside your bulletin, there's this this stuff about life together, like some of our practices here at the church about our life together, and that's a little bit about what we are talking about. It's on our website also, but these are things that after the church had been going for a little while, and we had this church that's just trying to follow the way of Jesus, and we thought, what are the things that are happening when things are going right? And what are the things that are missing when the wheels are falling off, you know? And so we wrote these things down. So it's not like, hey, everyone, you should do these things. It's most of this is stuff that we're just already doing anyway. And we just wrote down what it is that we see us doing together as we are following Jesus. And that seems to be working out well. So as we're talking about this life together stuff, and it's about relationships, you can apply this stuff to your relationship with Cousin Vern or that cute girl that you met at the bus stop the other day, or whatever you want to do. But and it will make those relationships better, assuming that there would even begin to be one. But it would make those relationships better, and you can use it for that stuff. But that's not what this is about. It's about something that's so much bigger and so much more important than just your relationships, than those types of relationships. It's about your relationships with the people that are in this room. And just a minute, I'm going to explain why that's so much more important. But it's about your relationships with the people that walk through the door of this church, the people that might walk through the door of this church one day. This life together stuff is about that. It's about our life together as a church. I can't tell you how many times that I've met with people and they said, wow, I love coming to this church. There's just something here. There's just a different feel in the room, and I can't put my finger on it, this, or maybe it's this, but just something feels so good and so right, you know? And there's a that I think that it could be, you know. I mean, partly it's the stuff that we pump in through the air conditioning system, but you know, but there's other things that have got to be there too, you know. One of the things that I think that it is, it's the way that we feel about each other, is that we people come into a room where people love each other, And this is just a really unusual place in the world, Edgewood Church. This, you know, maybe it's glaringly obvious to you, and maybe it's not. But we live in a world that is very divided, right? Very divided, very separated. Did you know that, like, very few white people and very few black people have friends, like real friends, that are of the other race? Very few. That, like, that you can talk about real life stuff of, like, hey, this is the way that I feel about this stuff. Hey, my white friend, this is how I'm feeling about white people today. Hey, my black friend, this is how I'm feeling about black people today. You know, or just any of that stuff. And it's fair, like it's fair game because you're friends, you know. Very few people have friends that are of like real friends that are of a different race. Another thing is that very few people that have friends that are of a different economic group. So everybody take out a pen real quick. I'm going to, you probably have heard of this, but it's called the Nathan's Milk Index, you know, to help you figure out what economic group that you're in. And it's just like cutting edge social science stuff. It is. So everybody get out your pen, and I want you to write down the current today cups of milk, like what it was today, this week. Just write that down. Yeah, per gallon. Yep. Good question. Per gallon. Just regular, not imported from the highlands of France milk, just regular stuff. Okay. All right. So now that you have that, your best guess of what that is, now you can use that and plug that into the Nathan's Milk Index to figure out group that you're in. Okay, so the first group of people they're a group of people that you don't actually have a good idea of what milk costs because you get your milk for free. You're in this economic group where Uncle Sam helps pay for your milk, so you just go and it doesn't matter what it costs because you get your milk for free and more milk than you can drink. And why you don't get more vegetables than what you do, I don't know, because they say that's really important, but Uncle Sam gives you a lot of milk, you know? So you don't know how much milk costs. Because you get it for free, okay? And then, you know, people that have technically like a little bit more money, they know how much within a nickel or within a dime, how much that milk costs. Because based on the numbers or whatever, they don't get their milk for free, so they have to pay attention to how much it costs, and so they've got to stretch every single dollar, and so they pay attention to how much that milk costs, because I got to feed myself, feed my family, and I don't get this stuff for free. And so when food prices go up and when those things change, it affects your life. Okay? So then you're in the middle. And there's this other category where you, again, don't know how much milk costs because it's insignificant. It's an irrelevant amount, whether it's $2.50 or $3.50 or $4 or $3.25 or $3.27. It doesn't matter to you because it's an irrelevant sum in the grand scheme of your finances. Okay, so the Nathan's Milk Index, those are the only three categories. And then, like, you know, that doesn't matter how much milk costs, doesn't matter how much milk costs. And it really matters how much milk costs, okay? So if you are in any of those three groups of people, most people don't have friends, like real friends, that are in a different economic group than they are, you know? Some people don't even know what life is like about in those things. They don't know that you know, you can get some steak and lobster, but you can't get vegetables, you know, and you can just poison yourself on the milk that they'll give you over here. A lot of people don't know what it's like to just, that you are watching, you know, how much, like cutting coupons to make sure that you get the food that your family can. And other people don't know what it's like. Just that be completely irrelevant in the life and the things that you pay attention to is the price of milk, you know? So we are a very separated and divided world. But if you look around, that's not true here. It's a different kind of place. And I love it. One of my favorite Sundays that I think about a lot lately was the Sunday after the police were shot in Dallas. You know, been a rough couple of weeks, rough summer, rough couple of weeks leading up to that. A lot of racial tensions, a lot of grief, a lot of sadness, a lot of anger, frustration. All those things were just very real in our world. You know, and I remember that Sunday, like just how much love that there was in this place. It's like people came here because they wanted to, it's like they're wanting to say, that's not me. I'm not like that. I want to be in a place in this world that it says that we can be different as people, that we can be different as human beings, as a society. And I want to be in a group of people that show something different to the world. And this room was just so full of love that Sunday because I felt like people just came here with those want to's. And those want-tos meant that this room was even more filled up with love in a week that was full of so many other darker things. It's a different kind of place. So here's the deal on why our relationships is more important than like what it could be with Steve at the post office or with your cousin Larry or even with your mom or like why it's so important, these relationships here. And this is either going to make you laugh or it's going to make you cry. And you could laugh for out of cynicism or just laugh for joy. I don't know, but it's going to make you laugh or cry. Depression or joy. I don't know. But here it is. Our world is broken and messed up. every day, not just the weeks like that we see some like where we're feeling it all on weeks of like shootings and stuff, but just every day our week is messed, our world is messed up and it's broken, and that has real consequences for real people's lives, yours and mine. And a huge, huge part of God's rescue plan to redeem and rescue and heal this world is us. You and me. This group of people right here. Big part of that. We're the A team, you know? There's no B team. We're it. So I don't know if that's going to make you cry and run out of here or just laugh at the ridiculousness of it, you know? Or just laugh for joy, like, yeah, hey, I get to be on the A team. Because there is no B team, you know? You know, and even if you think of all the churches that are all together all around the world, you know, we're still all a whole bunch of like flawed and broken and messed up people. I mean, we got people in here and Lauren and Daryl. I mean, you know, messed up people. Just so flawed. I mean, you were getting on to me last week, Daryl, when Sharon was preaching. So I gotta give it back to you a little bit. Gotta give it back to you a little bit. But we're part of a huge part of God's. What happens here in our life together is a huge and significant part of God's plan to rescue and redeem this broken world. And to say that there is another way. We can be different. This world can be different. Huge part of that. And so you just being here, you being a part of this, being a part of this life together stuff, it matters. It matters. It matters. It matters. It matters. Look at the way that Jesus put this to us. So Jesus is the central figure. He's the main character in God's rescue mission to heal and redeem the world. Same sort of thing that people looked at him and said, this cannot be. If this is what's going to set the world straight, this heal things. No, he's not killing Caesar. He's not setting up a great social program. What is he doing? He's just teaching and dying here and serving people and washing feet. How is this going to be helping here? But as history has shown, people don't even remember the name of Caesar at the time, typically, unless they remember the Christmas story, you know. And that's the only reason they would know the name of a Caesar around the time of Jesus, typically. But we remember Jesus' name, you know. There is a king, and that king's kingdom is winning. 2,000 years later, growing slowly, maybe, but it's winning. So this is what Jesus says to us. Sam, go to the next slide here. There we go. You've seen this before. My children, I will be with you a little longer. You will look for me, and just as I told the Jews, so I tell you now, where I am going, you cannot come. A new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. Must. Command. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. A lot of repetition in there. I think Jesus is saying, love one another. But that could be a little unclear in some places. That is the NIV, so I want to go to a different version. Sam, hit the slide here. This is the New Nathan paraphrase. So here's what this says. I'm not going to be here much longer, people. I am about to leave in a dramatic and painful way. And before I go, I need to tell you something very, very important and brand new, as if you've never heard this before. Love each other. Love each other. Jesus had told people this all the time, but he's saying, this is new. Hey, listen up. Love each other. It's the plan. In the same way that you have gotten caught up in this loving relationship with me, where I love you and you love me, and you love me and I love you, and we're just caught up in this thing, be decidedly intentional, because it's a command, it's a must. Be decidedly intentional about getting caught up in this kind of relationship with each other. Be decidedly intentional about getting this kind of a relationship. We love each other. You get it. As you do this, everyone will know that you love me and that I love you. Where is all this stuff coming from? They must love God. And God must love them. And they will want to get caught up in this loving with God relationship thing along with you. As the world sees you, all of us, loving each other and freely offering that gift to the people that want to come into our community of self-giving, self-sacrificing love, they will say, hey, I would like to get in on that too. That's a picture of how I would love for the world to be. And I didn't know that it's possible, but I see a little glimmer of something better and something new in this community. I'd like for the world to be that way. I'd like to be a part of that. I'd like to be loved and maybe even love people the way that these people are offering love to me. Love's thrown around there a lot, right? But it's important that we know what that word means. Because a lot of people throw that word around, and they don't always. When Billy under the bleachers says, oh, I love you, he doesn't mean the same thing. He's got a different definition in those moments, Billy under the bleachers, of what love means. So it is important that we understand what that means. Another thing that I've come to see in helping couples that are in crisis moments, most of the people that I do, they are in like nominally Christian or Christian, you know, those are the people that typically like in the rough times want to come talk to a pastor. But here's the deal. If these people are not just like nominally Christian, but like they're the real deal. They're not just part of the club, but like they get it, you know. The way these two people, groups of people understand really, really matters in the long run. If a couple comes in and I kind of digging, like when they're just can't even look at each other, stand to be in the same room with each other. But if they understand love is like a negotiation, is a quid, what is it, Sarah? There you go. Ask the attorney that what she said. An exchange, you know, like they may say love, but they're kind of getting into this thing because they want, like, I want something and I want to be happy and I want these things from you and you want these things from me. And so we're in this happy arrangement. We're in this happy, you know, contract. And so that's what we mean by love, you know. But when the wheels are falling off and you have a different understanding of love, that a love that is defined by this loyalty and love to Jesus, makes all the difference. Makes all the difference. Both couples probably had very lovely wedding ceremonies, you know, or the judge said very eloquent things when they got married. But what they meant by love, or what they have come to understand what love is very different. And it makes all the difference on whether they're going to walk out of this counseling relationship, out of this rut, this dark place in their marriage, with things being better and happy and good versus things falling apart or things just staying rut, you know? Love does not mean the same thing to everybody. So handily, John, who also wrote the Gospel of John, wrote some other letters, and in this, he tells us what love is. This is how we know what love is. John, 1 John 3:16. This is how we know what love is, that Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. This is how we know what love is, that Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, put us first, and so we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. So we ought to also put others first. And the New Nathan paraphrase goes something more like this. Through God's love and example, we come to know and understand what love really is about. And as we are receiving this and understanding and accepting this self-sacrificing, never giving up, never backing down kind of love that just keeps on coming and coming and coming and being offered to us over and over and over again, no matter what, that it begins to change us. And that we begin to want to love God in the same way. And that we want to love other people in the same way. And we want them to know what it's like to be loved in the way that we have been loved, with that same sort of self-sacrificing, never giving up, never surrendering, no matter what kind of love, the way that we have been loved. And know what it's like to be changed by that. Love is an intentional and deliberate choice. It is a choice. It is an intentional and deliberate choice to put others first. It's an intentional and deliberate choice to put others first. Let me give you some examples of the way that this plays out here in this room. We are loving each other when we are practicing repenting, which means turning around, turning away from the me, I, me, mine kind of crazy that we all are come, unfortunately, kind of pre-programmed with, you know, and this kind of thing that is never satisfied in us. And we begin intentionally deciding, choosing to begin thinking of others, to begin thinking of others. Who were you thinking about when you came to church today, when you walked into the room? Is your consciousness, is your thoughts, is it about me and I and mine and whatever? Are you also like thinking about the other people that are in the room with you? How are they doing? What's going on with them? How is their week? I haven't seen so-and-so. I don't know so-and-so. How does she feel welcome? Does he feel welcome? We are loving each other when we stop showing up at church just for ourselves and what we might get out of it, and we start showing up for the people who might be here today. We're beginning to love other people. We're beginning to love each other when we stop showing up at church just thinking about what it is that we might get out of it or what's in it for me. And we begin showing up here because it might matter to somebody else. Because maybe I can do something for somebody. Maybe me being there is going to make a difference for somebody else. Maybe it will matter that I'm there. Maybe there's a kind word that I can share or a hug that I can give. Maybe there's something that I can do to make this better, life a little easier, a little more loving, a little more warmth in this life for somebody that comes to my church today. Why did you come to church today? Who was it for? You say, I'm going to come here for somebody else, or did you just, you know, is it a habit? And what's that habit? You listen to the sermons and think, what can I get out of this? Or, gosh, I'm going to take some notes about how I can help this preacher. You know, just kidding. Some of you do that already. A lot of mental notes, and you love sharing them. Just kidding. Not exactly. We are loving each other when we are looking around for how we can help. And not just for what's here for me. When we're looking around, looking for ways to help. Hey, what needs to be done? Does trash need to be taken out? Is there stuff on the floor? Looking for work, you know? What needs to be done around here? What can I help out with? You know, or it's a different mindset than, gosh, the coffee was a little strong today. I don't know if I'm coming back next week. I'm going to find a place with warm coffee, you know. We are loving each other when we feel this deepening sense of lightness and gratitude and joy that comes from us growing in our ability to love each other. To love each other. Because really and truly, this like I, me kind of self-obsession stuff, it's a burden and it's a weight and it traps us down and it leads us to being unhappy. And God wants to set us free and saying, and that if you just listen to this life together stuff that Jesus wants to offer us, it actually sets us free. And we begin to feel light and grateful and joy. Because we're not paying attention to how strong or how weak the coffee is, or, oh my gosh, somebody dropped a muffin on the floor and now I have some of it on my shoe. We're just seeing the world different. We're seeing the people around us differently and our place in it. And we're becoming full of love and full of light as we love the people around us, you know? And the more that we do this, the more that we live into this, the more that we begin to see that Jesus' idea, that God's idea of saving the world through this life together stuff of people taking in the love of God and beginning to love themselves and love each other in this kind of a way isn't so crazy after all, but it is exactly what the world needs. It's exactly what the world needs. A group of people that says, I want to love you and to be loved by you and to be known by you, and I am here to serve and I am here to give and I am here to think about you and to put others first, because that's what my Jesus did and that's what my Jesus does, who loves me so much. And you got to know what it's like to be loved like that. You got to know. And the world begins to change. God wasn't so crazy. Jesus wasn't so crazy. So I'm going to end things a little differently with a little exercise, a little, by that I mean like almost literal exercise, like PT, physical exercise, and but it's for your mind, for your mind. Rikita, we're not going to, you know, not doing cardio, but just for your soul, just for your soul. So everybody close your eyes. This is a practice, and we are so, the ruts in us are just so, so deep. And thinking of ourselves and our own crazy self-obsession. So we're just going to take a break for a minute. And we are going to stretch our selfless muscle. Stretch our intentional choosing to put others first muscle. And think about others. I'm going to kind of guide you through this. So just as your eyes are closed, I want you to picture a chair in this room that's maybe on the same row as yours, maybe behind you, maybe on a different part of the room. And there's somebody in that chair that you don't know, or you don't know very well. Maybe you've never seen them before, or maybe you just don't know them very well. And just kind of hold that person in your mind and think, how is their week? Where are they finding joy lately? What's dragging on them this week? How did he or she feel when they walked through the door this morning? And how do they feel about being here now? Then I want to you to think of another chair in this room, just another spot down the row. And just imagine there's somebody in that chair that you've known for a long time, maybe months or years. And ask those same questions. How are they doing? Do they know that I love them and that I care about them? That they matter to me? Has anyone listened to them today? After they've been here for all this time, how well do they know that they are loved and that they matter here. Now I want you to think about there's two children's volunteers in the other part of the building. Maybe they're doing games or arts and crafts and things at the moment in a room full of kids, teaching them about songs and stories about Jesus. Serving the kids. How are they doing? What's the stuff that's giving them joy lately? The things that brings them to tears? They know that this is a place that they're not just needed, but they're also loved for who they are and not just what they do. And I want you to think about one of the little people. Just hold them in your mind. And if you're a mom or a dad, not one of your own kids, skip that. Imagine somebody else. They walked into church this morning. And the doors were so high and the people were so big. Sometimes what's on the counters is out of their sight. What do they feel when being here? What are they learning about God and God's people from being around you and your presence here? Do they know in the depths of who they are that they are not, that they are precious in God's sight, that they are precious in your sight? I want you to imagine all the people and all the chairs in this room and the kids. Everybody in the building and on the property here, and just hold them in your mind for a second and just say, I love you, in your mind. Just say, I love you.